Welcome to ESPN's The Far Post podcast. We are back for our penultimate episode of the season. Oh my God. We have our grand finalists. We have our grand final. Tickets are now on sale. But before we start talking about the grand final, we obviously need to talk about how we got there. And that's what this episode is going to be about. So we can't wait to crack in, dissect the second legs of the semifinals, and then do a little grand final preview as well. Before we begin, though, we want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we're recording on today, the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For today, you've got me, Marissa Lodanik, Anna Harrington, Sam Lewis, and Angela Christian Wilkes. So, my dudes, let us begin second leg semi-final reviews. I have found the second first leg thing a bit of a tongue twister every time I've had to say it, so I'm kind of glad we've moved past that. But let's talk about the two results from this weekend. So we kicked things off at glorious Leichhardt, may I say, with Sydney FC and Central Coast Mariners playing out a 1-1 draw, but Sydney FC getting the win 2-1 on aggregate. So Sydney FC, that means they have made their seventh straight grand final in a row, which is genuinely one of the most ridiculous statistics I've ever heard in my life. Let's talk about it. Sam, were you at Leichhardt watching this one?
I was not at Leichhardt, sadly. I was unfortunately in Canberra doing some family things, but I was able to watch it on television. And I got to say, it looked stunning. It just looked so good. Over 7,000 people rocked up to this game at Leichhardt Oval. Aside from the grass, which was looking a little bit dry, the crowd, the atmosphere, the day, it just looked beautiful. I was really, really mad that I actually wasn't able to get there. And the game itself was also great. It was the kind of game I think that we expected based on that first leg. I was really impressed with both sides, particularly the Central Coast. You know, I think it's very easy for a team in a position like theirs coming in from behind. They've never reached a stage like this in finals before. They've got a pretty young, inexperienced squad who've never had to play in a knockout competition like this or a knockout round like this, where it's literally you have to win this game and that's it. I thought they were great. And I thought that they probably deserved to score more than one goal based on the way that they played. I've been so impressed with how they have managed themselves and how Husband has managed them over the course of this whole season, but particularly over the last month or two. I think they've just been terrific. They've been such an example of what a good coach can do for a team. You don't have to have absolute superstars everywhere. You just need to have some solid footballers who know what they're doing, and you need to have a good coach who can get the best out of them. And the Central Coast, I think, have really proved that, and they've really come into their own towards the back end of the season, which is why, you know, I'm kind of sad that actually they weren't able to win this two-legged playoff. I would have loved to see them take it to Melbourne City, because I think that would have been a really great, really fun and a really competitive contest. As we were just saying pre-record, it's kind of boring that it's Sydney against Melbourne City in the grand final. Like, I know we haven't seen it for a couple of years, but, you know, give someone else a go. You know, I would have liked to have seen a different fan group, you know, a different narratives, different, all that kind of stuff. Cause I think it's just become this rivalry has just become a little bit stale, but yeah, look, the game was great. I paid huge compliments to Mackenzie Hawksby in my rap for the ABC on Monday, because she really has just been the saviour of this team ever since she signed for them or re-signed for them in late December. Totally changed their fortunes. She's been so crucial in the final series, and these two goals in the first and second leg, I think, really prove how unshakable and how crucial she's become to this Sydney side. So hopefully she's all right. She was hobbling a little bit towards the back end of the game, but she's a war horse. I reckon she'll be fine.
She's a gun. She just adds that edge to Sydney, I think. Like, it was interesting. I asked Ante, like, you know, have you been surprised or particularly impressed with how she's reintegrated back in after a difficult time at Brighton? And he said, the big thing you notice isn't so much, you know what she can do on the field, but off the field, it's sort of given everyone a pep in their step. She's like, he was like, Nat Tobin looks happier. Princess Sabini looks happier. She has this personality that lifts the whole group and takes them forward, and then you obviously know what she can do on the field. It just says so much about her. I think she is almost like the symbolic captain of that team. She is the leader. She's the one that puts everyone on her back and goes, off we go. We're going to go win this thing. And to be honest, she's the reason why. I know Courtney Vine's a terrific player. They've got some terrific players, but she's the difference, I think. She's the player that you look at. And this grand final just seems made for her in a game where there's lots of – both teams have some flaws, some deficiencies. It could be a very even game, but Mackenzie Hawksby is a difference maker. And I just – yeah, I feel like she may well be the difference again this week if she's fit. He did note that if she was sort of hobbling around for like 3-4 minutes, which isn't usually a good sign. I really, really hope she's right because she's a super player. She's a big stage player. And it just won't be the same without her there. Yeah, she was fantastic. I agree with you, Sam. I think Central Coast really in this game spurned a lot of chances. They should have really got this on level footing. And, you know, it's one of those ones where you don't put your chances away. You're left to rue it. And I think that's the difference. Sydney FC, when it really counts, when it's on the line, and M Husband said as much. It's like they dominated a lot of the two games, but they didn't dominate where it counts. And they'll learn so much from this. It's all about moments. I feel like Kai Simon's usually such a clinical player. She had some moments, like chances, that she didn't bury the way you'd expect her to. Yeah, it's a difficult one. But, yeah, I think Sydney, the way they have rallied and performed when it's really counted, has just shone through. And it was interesting, Ante said it didn't matter for him that it was the seventh time. It was the way they did it this time. They've had so much player turnover, you know, players leaving, players having injuries, like the Kirsty Fenton injury, the Nat Tobin injury, and the way they've sort of pushed through it all. Like, I think there's actually a lot of similarities between them and Melbourne City, who obviously lost Torpy and Proulx and have had their own fair share of injuries, the McNamara injury being the most devastating of all. It's a really interesting, like, two teams that have overcome so much to get to this point.
Yeah, I guess I don't, in terms of, I feel like this game is definitely, actually, I don't know if I stand by that statement that I was about to say. I was like, I thought this game was the more interesting of the two semifinals. Actually, I think it was the less interesting, but I do think it was the more competitive and more even. And I think, yeah, the 2-1 aggregate for Central Coast, I suppose this is the first kind of season where we've seen this format play out as well. So I guess there are definitely pros and cons to that. Like for Sydney putting in the work earlier on, they're not going to go into the final with, you know, having to have pushed a game into extra time and potentially penalties and have that off their shoulders. So definitely works, and they're through to the final, so obviously works in their favor. But I think, yeah, just at Central Coast, they've had a fantastic season. They've had a very even, like, steady season as well. And I think that's kind of been something that's not been super prominent across the teams this year. There's been a lot of quite patchy teams who've had really good glimpses and then quite, you know, low moments as well. So, yeah, massive credit to M Husband, and really excited to see what, like, this definitely feels like the start of a really exciting project as well. So I'm really excited to see what Central Coast do because there's kind of, if they can keep, I really hope that M Husband comes back next year and is able to kind of continue, and we get to follow along with that. And yeah, she's obviously a fantastic coach. As you said, Sam, like, just she has been able to work with what she's had and get, yeah, through to the semis. It's amazing. And in terms of Mackenzie Hawksby, no one quote me on these stats. I'm not a stats girly, so I'm doing this on the fly. But I did have a look, and since Mackenzie Hawksby came back, Sydney have only lost that one game, that blip, the victory game last round of the season. And that's really interesting. They haven't had a huge amount of losses this season, but they did have an interesting kind of like wobbly start. And so I think there's a lot of credit to be given there for Hawksby in terms of being that engine and the amount of stuff that she does on the field. I feel like she's just kind of, yeah, the heart of the team. So I'd agree with what you've both said there and all the plaudits that you've given her as well. And I really think I'm excited to see what she does in the final as well, because I do think she had a little bit of a point to prove coming back from Brighton. And I think she's still got a point to prove in terms of what a fantastic midfielder she can be. And I suppose getting in Matilda's conversations and that kind of thing, having a standout performance in the final will contribute to that. But yeah, I don't really have much to add. I'm basically, yeah, same. Central Coast, great season. Mackenzie Hawksby, what a gal.
I wanted to pick up on a point that you made, Harrow, which is about the way that this season feels for Sydney FC, because I do think it feels different. Like, they've been in the last seven grand finals, but this journey that they've gone on over this particular period really does make this grand final feel like it has been a harder time for them to get to. Like, they've really had to scrape through the season in some cases. They've had to dig into the absolute depths of the squad that they've got. They've had to shuffle people around, and those people haven't necessarily been great in the holes that they've had to fill. Yet they've somehow managed to do it, and they were 2 points away from also winning the Premiership trophy as well. And isn't that just another sort of testament to something that we've talked about a lot, which is Ante Juric's ability and Sydney FC's ability to have this longer term vision for the club. Like, they are always thinking a season ahead. They are always bringing in players and providing them with opportunities and betting them in, even if it might seem it's like a little bit too early now. Come next year or next year, they will be there and they will flourish. And Mackenzie Hawksby is probably the best example of that, right? Like, Juric plucked her from MPL2. She was playing State League and hardly anybody knew who she was. She had a bit of an iffy first season with Sydney, but then has been absolutely flying and has been probably the best midfielder for the past two seasons, aside from maybe a Sarah Hunter. And Alex Chidiac, like, she's just been phenomenal. And she is, I think, a huge reason why Sydney FC have been so as successful as what they have been over the past 2 to 3 seasons. She has just become the heartbeat of the team in so many ways. And her story, I think, is such a nice mirror of the way that this team has, especially this season, had to kind of struggle and scrape and scrap it through all of these huge challenges and have somehow come out the other end being on the verge of lifting another major trophy. So yeah, I think it's amazing. And I'm really keen to see how some of these younger players going forward. A player like Margot Chavez, for example, who really was kind of just a break glass in case of emergencies, you know, substitute, because you missed out on all these other players through injury and XYZ. And she's played at left back. She's played in central midfield all over the shop. She's played in lots of different areas and has been good in all of them. Not been great in all of them, but been good, been solid in all of them. And so I'd love to see what the longer term plan is for a player like her, or a Shay Holman, for example, or an Abby Lemon, or an Indiana DeSantis. Like, these are sort of younger players who haven't really made a splash this season. They haven't really put their name up in lights, but based on what we know can happen inside the magic cauldron of Sydney FC, these could be players who in the next 3 to 5 years are, you know, going overseas themselves. They're making senior Matildas caps themselves. They're doing all these different things. So yeah, it feels like a different season, but at the same time, it sort of feels like it's still an example of the bigger Sydney FC project that's been going on for a long time.
We got a question that I think links both this game and the next game together from Kylie. And she basically asked, because we did say it, we said it at the start, that it was a boring grand final, like, historically. It turns out now a quarter of all dub grand finals have been Melbourne City, Sydney FC grand final, which is, like, it works because there hasn't been that many of them, but, like, a quarter of them have been Sydney and Melbourne City. So Kylie asked, what works so well at Sydney and City to have them so consistently up there? Is it just money? So do we have theories as to why these teams are so consistently good?
It's not just money, it's well-spent money and well-used resources. Western Sydney have plenty of resources but haven't used them the same way, or maybe diverted the same level of resources. They've both had different ways of structuring up their program. Cities has been a bit more of a slow burn more recently because they had those sort of Galacticos, all the Matildas, and they had to change it. And they focused on bringing good young players from other teams and as well as developing a couple themselves. But just a commitment. If you go to Sydney FC, you know what you're going to get with Ante Juric. You're going to work hard. You're going to have to fit into the structure, but it pays off, right? And I think Sam summed up how well they've developed players. Courtney Vine is another classic example who sort of bounced around everywhere before settling at Sydney. Melbourne City, it's a very similar situation. And Victory is probably the third one in that category, albeit without quite as much, you know, they've been in the champions the last few years. It's pretty clear, right? You invest, you have good coaches, you have good people. And one thing that City and Sydney have done is they have really good leaders. Like, I know Nat Tobin's injured, but we have Hawksby, and Abini's obviously had the captain's armband this season. At City, you have Rebecca Stott. I think they've also benefited from having players like Barbara the latter part of the season and Melissa Barbieri. And then Hannah Wilkinson, you know, I think is divisive in terms of how she plays and whether she suits City, but having some key points in your team that are mature senior players allows the others to sort of develop and thrive. And yeah, they back themselves, they play good football, and they've done it for a long time. And I think if you join these clubs, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get looked after if you get injuries. You're going to be encouraged to develop, and you're probably going to have a long career. So I think it's just you earn your reputation. You can't just make it out of nowhere. And hopefully we see that precedent maintained with like the way Central Coast and that have set up this year.
And I think it's also bouncing off that, Hara, it's about consistency and longevity in terms of players.
For sure.
The thing that I've noticed is very similar with Sydney FC and Melbourne City is that there hasn't been a huge amount of player turnover in the last two seasons. City obviously had the one that you referenced there, Hara, after they lost all the Matildas and had to sort of start again. But the last two to three seasons, they've had pretty much the same core of players. You know, they've had a Polisena, they've had a Gallich, they've had a Wilkinson, they've had a, you know, a number of these sort of spine players who, once they have this consistency in terms of their teammates, in terms of their coaching, in terms of the facilities, in terms of their location where they're living, you know, having that and being able to build your life around that translates to what we see on the field. And that's probably why Melbourne City have been so good from the start of the season, because they kind of just came back into the season off the back of the last one. They were like, I know all of you, I know how we play, let's just keep doing that. So they didn't really need to like take time to warm up in the same way that a Central Coast did, or the same way that a team that had a lot of turnover, like a Brisbane Roar or, you know, Newcastle Jets, for example, did. And it's the same with Sydney. There hasn't been a huge amount of turnover. There's just been a loss of players. And I think that's maybe been the bigger or the most significant maybe differentiator between these two sides, is that when City have lost players, they've had the players who can really fill the holes, whereas Sydney FC haven't quite been able to do that. They're maybe one season behind the ability to be able to do that, to just have a plug and play replacement player if you've got someone who falls out due to injury. Melbourne City, I think, were just a little bit further along in that process and in the depth that they had in their squad and the maturity and the chemistry that they had in those players to be able to pop them into fill a Holly McNamara or a Caitlin Torpy or a, you know, XYZ role. So yeah, I think that's like it's really important that people need to remind ourselves that, you know, 2 to 3 year contracts in the dub are still pretty rare, but these are two of the clubs that do it. And I think that's probably a big reason why we see them where they are now.
And I know your City, Sydney, Victory types are usually the types where players can get access to facilities and stuff outside the season, or your traditional contracted hours, I think, too. And a lot of them go and play, if they're not playing overseas, they're playing NPL together, those sorts of things. There's a lot of connections and it's a lot of work. And as you say, Sam, it's that consistency.
I was going to say, in terms of that squad stability, it's something that seems notable about Sydney, what you kind of touched on before, Sam, is that like they do have these young players that are developing, but a lot of the time it feels like if you're a player who's got a little bit of a way to go in terms of developing, if you come to Sydney, you're not going to leave necessarily. And like they do have that kind of conveyor belt thing going on, which has become a lot more prominent since, I guess, that shift in the dub. I guess that would have been like 2020 when it stopped being so Matilda's heavy. And I think that Sydney's ability to adapt from that, City were hit harder back then, but I think they've finally kind of caught up to what they need to be doing, and we can really see the rewards of that this season with the likes of like a Gallich. But I think also, yeah, just like there doesn't seem to be any players leaving Sydney, like any big coups, if that makes sense. Like there's nowhere, Sydney is kind of the end goal. Like if you want to get to a point where you want an overseas move, or you want to kind of grow into your game a bit more, that's what it feels like. And I think that goes back to coaches and Ante Juric and his ability to build this project, but also like coaching stability. I feel like, yeah, coaching stability must have a massive part to do with it as well. So when like City were looking a little bit patchy due to, you know, I guess not kind of catching up to losing all their Matildas, they were able to catch up. And since then it's been both Vidasiches at the helm. And I think I it's just a theory, but I think that must be super, super important in being able to not only have the freedom as a coach to work long-term on something and build back into things, but also to come from a baseline of already being quite good. So you're not coming in as a coach having to start from scratch, which I think, like, for example, when we look at a Perth Glory, that's the big one that comes to mind. And Alex Aparkas, I feel like he's still having to prove himself, even though he's been at Perth for quite a while, because Perth were never like a team that were in and around finals every single season. And kind of maybe the inverse of that is like a victory, I guess the fallout from that is, for example, victory not doing so crash hot this season. Question marks are raised when you are in and around finals and you're one of the more dominant clubs season to season. But my point is basically coming from that baseline, I think that must be quite beneficial for a coach like an Ante Juric, because you can experiment, you can try new things, you can try new players. But you've also got that core and the leaders, like you said, Hara, of having like really strong players that will keep coming back and will contribute to a really positive culture. So I think, yeah, the resources plus the culture. I wanted to be like, well, it's just oil money. It's just oil money, actually. But I'm not an idiot. Like, I know it's not just that. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a fascinating discussion because longevity is hard in any kind of league. So I think it's definitely a worthy discussion to have, like why these two teams in particular are good. But it's time to move on to our second semi-final. It was 3-0 to City in the first leg and it was 3-0 to City in the second leg. So they ended up winning 6-0 on aggregate. Angela, I wanted to come to you first because you said when we were talking about Sydney and Central Coast that like, obviously there was the balance of interesting fixture versus competitive fixture. And for Sydney Central Coast, it was definitely more competitive, but not as interesting. So what made this City Newcastle one more interesting to you? Because we obviously know that it wasn't as competitive as the other one.
Yeah, I think it was, we discussed this a lot last week with the preview of how Newcastle were going to approach this game. And the first like 25 minutes was bananas. So I think Newcastle, so there was that shot in the first, it was the third minute that came off the woodwork. It seemed like they were just like pinging balls at the goal. And I think I looked at the shot chronology, is that the right word? I don't bloody know. Anyway, and it was like 10 shots for Newcastle in the first 23 minutes and then one shot for City, and it's the shot that Rihanna Polisena converted. And like City, it was kind of end to end and City were getting near the goal but not necessarily having like the best chances or being able to create a whole lot. But I think again it's like that sustained pressure from them. They're so patient as a side that once they got that first goal, it just kind of, I think that it seemed insurmountable for Newcastle to have come back from that. But that first 23 minutes, it felt like they could, but they just weren't clinical. I think they were just panicked and it was very chaotic. And then it was a pretty even And then, like, they basically didn't get anywhere near it for the rest of the half. And it was City for the rest of the game. And, yeah, I don't know. It felt a bit depressing after that. But that first 25 minutes, I had a good time. I really thought it was exciting. But, yeah, City really played Newcastle out of the game by the end of it. And they, you know, did their whole thing of, oh, we'll just keep possession and we'll keep the ball and we'll just take our chances when we get them. Oh, okay, City, all right.
How boring.
Yeah.
Oil money. Yeah, exactly what you said, Angela, watching it. I was at the ground too, and Newcastle had to bury one of those chances. They did all the right things. They started with two strikers. They attacked. They went and went and went. And it's weird. They've been so clinical for most of the season, and then they're finishing let them down. Maybe there was just that, I guess, extra level of pressure that they weren't able to rise to the occasion in that sense. And then let's be honest, once Polisena had made it a 4-0 tie, it was done. It was done. They were as fun as they've been. Like, City, I think credit to them, have really matured throughout the season. They've got a lot better at managing the game. Yeah, they didn't look too challenged from there, and they took their goal as well. I think the Wilkinson one looked potentially offside. Interesting that talking to Ryan Campbell after the match, he said that the reports had come out the day before about there's an owner for the Jets, and apparently that was quite unsettling for the players because they were like, but we've not been told. And then they were getting told, no, it hasn't actually happened yet. You know, like, we're... So I imagine having that happen the day before your crucial game kind of helped. But, yeah, they did what they could. Like, they'd put themselves in a... Or City had put them in a really difficult position after the first leg. 3-0 down was always going to be difficult to come back from it. They had to score one of those goals early. They didn't. And then credit to City. They were just so professional. I thought Barbara and Stott early was so important. Saves, goal line clearances, as I said earlier, like level-headedness. But, geez, how good was the goal? I think it was Davidson with the run. Then Danny Gallich just had this, like, surgical precision. I think it was how friend of the pod Joe Lynch put it. And I agree. It was an incredible ball for Polisena, who, if we're talking about players who love the big stage, another one right there, buried it. Job just about done. And, yeah, I think they can be really proud of what they've done. I think it's going to be unlikely that we see Carly Ross back in this week. She was out with a foot injury. Barbara got subbed at halftime. Combination of being unwell during the weekend, a bit of a quad thing. Maybe a tweak to quad a bit, so we'll see what happens there. I thought Melissa Barbieri didn't miss a beat when she came on, to be fair. But otherwise, they looked in pretty good nick. Like, they were average for that first 20 minutes when Newcastle were all over them. But then once they sort of, you know, settled their nerves with that goal, they never really looked like being challenged. But I think if they let the same sort of openings happen again against Sydney FC, they will be punished. So that's where it intrigues me a little bit, because I think your Courtney Vines punish you, Mackenzie Hawksby punishes you. I'm going to be really intrigued to see how they handle it.
Yeah, but in saying that, I mean, Sydney FC have kind of forgotten how to score goals recently. You know, like, they haven't scored since they beat Adelaide at the end of March, maybe. Then they lost to Canberra. They lost to Melbourne Victory. Both of those, they didn't score any goals. Then it was just Mackenzie Hawksby scoring a goal against the Mariners in each of the semi-final legs. And that was kind of it. And both of those goals were, to be honest, pretty opportunistic too. Like, I don't know how confident I felt with the way that Sydney was able to create, like, genuine chances against the Mariners in those semifinals. Whereas I think City are much more believable when they go forward. Like, when they attack as a team, they have so many weapons and they have so many options that you know that they are going to score somehow. Whereas if with Sydney, the ball kind of doesn't fall to Courtney Vine, you're like, are they going to do something? Maybe Shea Connors, but also Shea Connors hasn't scored in a long time too. So it's like, So that's where my head is at, basically, is that City are better and more holistic when as an attacking team than Sydney FC are. I do agree that Sydney are probably going to be more clinical in, like, turnover moments. And I think that's probably where Sydney are going to be. I know we're sort of throwing ahead in terms of, like, previewing the grand final, but I think that's where Sydney are going to maybe be a bit more effective than what Newcastle were, because, number one, this is a one-off game. So it's not like City can put them to bed with, you know, if I have 4-0 aggregate scoreline in the 25th minute. Sydney, I think, are also like they're very energetic. They're very fit. They're very good at pressing. And that was the thing that really threw City against Newcastle in those opening 20 minutes. Newcastle were, they were so quick to get the ball back. They were so quick to transition. They were so quick. They were all over Melbourne City when they tried to play out from the back. They hustled. They constantly had the ball off them. They were just really good at smothering any kind of avenue that City had and wouldn't let them get comfortable on the ball. They wouldn't let them get comfortable in possession. And so there were a lot of turnovers. There was a lot of giveaways, a lot of that stuff. So yeah, like that, like you said, Angela, that opening 25 minutes, like I was so excited about that because I was like, surely, like what, like just the law of large numbers tells me one of these has to go in, because they had a billion shots and some of them didn't go in just by like the miraculousness of the universe. Like the ball just happened to go this way instead of that way, or Barbara just happened to get her body there instead of that. Like it was just one of those games, one of those opening moments. But it was the City machine. The City machine just kept on rolling. And when Polisena put that ball in and made it 4-0, yeah, it really did look like the Jets were just like, well, what's the point? You know, like we've already spent so much energy trying to get this done. And sometimes it's just not your day. Sometimes the ball just doesn't want to go in its home and the universe has other plans for you. And so you just have to settle with that and accept that. So I'm like, I learned a lot from that game. I learned a lot about both of those teams from that game. I really hope that with this sort of rumbling now about the club being sold, that it's going to give Ryan Campbell and the players a lot more security about their futures there. Cause I think what they've got is the bones of something really good. I think they've got really good players. They seem to really enjoy playing together as well. Like you can sort of sense when a team is like in the vibe and they're really loving what's going on around them and how their teammates are performing. And I really get that sense from Newcastle this year, which is maybe why they've gone so far. Cause they've just like, they've been in the wilderness for such a long time. And this really feels like the first season where they're like, you know what? We can actually be really competitive. We can really like shake shit up here. So I hope a lot of these players stay around. I hope the new owners are smart and that they lock Serena Bolden into a long-term marquee contract because she's absolute box office. I hope they keep Melina Reyes. I hope they keep Melinda Jade Barbieri. I hope they keep so many of these players because they're all excellent. And they just need more time together. And I think next season, if they're able to keep the core of the squad together, could actually be a serious run for a trophy.
And Ryan Campbell's already said he wants to stay around. He wants the job. Obviously, all this stuff has to get sorted out. He wants to try and keep this team together. You look at if you can get some money into the joint, can you get some more good overseas players as well to help bolster things? Can you keep... Because for them, it's not just like keeping talent, right? Because for so long, it's just the best of it's been pilfered by Sydney FC and Western Sydney in particular. So also Melbourne City, Polisena is a good example of that. But I think I really like with City how they've managed to fit Davidson and Hughes into the same team. I feel like that's given them a lot more stability. Briley Henry moving to that sort of wing-back role has really worked for her. She's been able to use her speed and create. And we know how solid Grosso is at left-back. Having her back from injury has been big. I feel like they're a lot more stable. They're not shipping goals as easily as they were City, which I think will actually... as much as we were talking about it, Sam, make them that little bit harder for Sydney to get a hold of. So I reckon hopefully this grand final has a bit of punch to it.
It's going to be a fun grand final. I will ask you all for a tip with some stats before I ask you the question. So as we said, a quarter of all dub grand finals have been Sydney versus Melbourne City. The three before this one on the weekend, Melbourne City has won all of them against Sydney FC. So Sydney FC have never beaten Melbourne City in a grand final. Melbourne City are currently 4-4 in their grand final history, their record. Sydney FC have made 11 grand finals for 4 wins. So I give you the numbers, you do with them what you want, but who do we think will be lifting the trophy by the end of the day on Saturday?
Sydney FC, like I've been saying it all season, they're ominous, they are the Death Star, they feel inevitable. if any team can beat them, it will be this City one. I feel like they match up quite well. But no, I think in a one-off game, everything's on the line. You trust Sydney FC to be clutch.
My heart says Sydney and my head says Melbourne City. And I just think that because, like, I think Sydney have gone, they've had to do too much to get to this point. I think they've had to really, like, find some newer depths to themselves and stretch themselves so thin in terms of squad and in terms of travel and in terms of so much stuff that I just think this will be a bridge too far. And I think Melbourne City have got too much quality in too many areas that Sydney FC are not going to be able to account for, particularly defensively and in some areas of midfield. I think Melbourne City will just be too good. So, yeah, my tip is City.
My tip is City, just because I'm a pessimist. Isn't that a weird situation to be in? I can be a pessimist about Sydney as well, but I just think, to be fair, I do think the City have been the better team this season. And I think they, like you said, Sam, that Sydney have been struggling to score goals. And so if City come into the game and are a bit more composed and can defend well and just kind of be very disciplined and, you know, organized for the first part of the game, I think they'll break through eventually. So I do think it'll be City. Yeah, but I'm hoping it's going to be a ripper game. That's my hope. And yeah, sorry, Sam and Anna, I guess I'm being rude to both of you.
I hope it's a game. Does anyone remember the Sydney Melbourne City semi-final from a couple of seasons ago in Sydney, where Melbourne
very
City,
dramatic one,
the really like crazy one, where Melbourne City were wearing like that steel grey like away kit, and it was like a 4-3 or something like that. I had to go to extra time, something insane like that. Sydney came back from being behind. Yeah, I want a game like that. I want like everyone going fucking across the wall, like just doing absolutely everything, knowing this is the last game, leave everything out there. Not to be cliche, but like this is it. Just go and have a ripper time. Hopefully it's going to be a huge crowd as well. I think the goal is to try and make it, if not a sellout, then hopefully the biggest crowd for an A-League Women's Grand Final ever. And based on some of the numbers we've had over the final series, that's looking pretty likely. So yeah, I just want it to be great entertainment. It's at a great time. Hopefully it's going to be good weather. Amy Park, you know, what more do you want?
Good crowd, stand alone. Like, it would have been so silly to have it as a doubleheader with a Melbourne Victory men's game. Yeah. I think that would have been so insulting to both games, to be honest, but especially the grand final. Should be standalone, is standalone, gets that great time slot, get along, tickets are reasonably priced. But yeah, anyway, it's a great crowd. It will be a great crowd, I'm sure. Standalone game, it deserves it. Hopefully plenty of people get along and have a really good time and really enjoy it because, yeah, it's what these players deserve, right? Dario Vidicic said he would have given away all the tickets for free to try and fill the stadium. So
still do it. Fuck it. Why not? You know, if there's some left over by game day.
Give away to junior football.
Yeah. You know, do it.
Or senior football.
I would have said it's Melbourne City home game, but why not get Courtney Vine posters everywhere? Like, do what you can. Fill it up. It deserves it.
Got to tap into that name recognition because it is so big. But nah, we all hope it's a great grand final. If you can make it down, it is Saturday, May 4th. Kickoff is at 4:15 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Tickets are on Ticketek now, so go get them. If for whatever reason you are not in Melbourne, you can't get down to Melbourne, the game will be on television. It will be on 10 Bold as well as 10 Play and Paramount Plus. So there are so many ways in which you can watch this game, and we absolutely can't wait to talk about it afterwards because we do hope, if nothing else, that it is a fun grand final. But let's move along. Any boots this week? I don't think anything bad. Has anything bad happened? Have we had a nice, peaceful week for once? Listeners, they're all looking at me. Oh, no.
We can, I don't know how many people got up at Sparrow's Fart to watch the second leg of the Champions League semi-final against Chelsea and Barcelona, but I was pretty disappointed with the refereeing in that game. And that's, I don't know, this is probably not worthy of a boot, but like you would think that referees at this kind of level would know when a foul is not a foul, when a yellow card is not a yellow card. You know, it's just, I don't want to rip into referees because I feel like we need to address the structures in which referees are produced in the women's game first. But at the same time, like if you're the selector, choose a referee who knows what they're doing for a game which is going to be as intense and as shithousery as Chelsea v Barca. Like, you know, you saw the first leg, you saw how that went, you know the kinds of people who are going to be coming into this game, the kinds of things that they're going to do to try and get an edge. And yet, alas, they did not do that. So I don't know. That's probably not worth a boot, Marissa. Maybe you can chop that. I don't know.
Well, unfortunately, it leads to a how good, which, I mean, if you're a Chelsea fan, it's not a how good, but Aitana Bonmatí's shithousing, hilarious.
Yes, it is hilarious.
Unfortunately, she's limping off the pitch. The boos are raining down at her. That's the largest crowd the Stamford Bridge has ever had for a Chelsea women's game. She is hobbling. She is at death's door. And as soon as she crosses that line, she jogs over to, like, tap Alexia Putellas' hand as she's coming into the game. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, that's really fucking funny.
For a minute.
True menacing.
She really is the best at everything. Like, there's nothing she's not good at.
I saw someone call her Aitana Goatmati, and she really lived up to that. If shithousing really is part of your goat requirements, so
surely it should be Aitana Barmati. No, that doesn't work. Sorry, a bar could be a sheep. You don't want to be a sheep, anyway.
Aren't they bar too? Like, what sound?
Goats kind of yell, don't they? Then it's not really like a storybook. Bah, it's more like a rah.
Bah-ma-ty.
Now I'm thinking of the Taylor Swift goat.
The Taylor Swift one. The goat. It does the goat version of Trouble.
Oh God.
The screaming goat.
Amazing. Anyway. Like I said, we have to keep that in because it has led us to this conversation, which is pure gold.
Oh boy.
And absolutely worth keeping in. But let's do some other how goods. Who else has a how good for the group?
I do actually have a how good. I would like to give a shout out to Brianna Edwards, the goalkeeper from the Wellington Phoenix, who won the save of the season with an unbelievable effort against the Newcastle Jets. I don't know how many people remember it. It's on the A-League social, so you can go and watch the video. But for a very brief description, there was a beautiful cross that came from quite deep from the right side for the Newcastle Jets. Serena Bolden, soaring up in the air, gets a big athletic header to it. It's heading right towards the top pocket of the near post. And Bree Edwards is, like, at this point, horizontal, like she somehow is like flat in the air diving across, and the ball somehow thwacks off her hand and goes out. It was the most incredible save. It's absolutely deserving of save of the year. So shout out to Bree Edwards. How good.
I was just gonna say, is that the one where Bree Edwards swore in the post-match interview? Am I thinking of a different moment?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I'll have to dig that up if it was. And she was just subbed on, or maybe I get confused a lot. But anyway, Pozzadozza, do you want me to just waffle into? Well, yeah, shout out to Pozzadozza, aka Polly Doran. She's been playing for Crystal Palace, and they have been promoted into the FA WSL from the Championship. Woo-hoo! Which is very, very exciting. She's been getting heaps of game time there, has been super, super consistent, just doing what she does best, which she's just, for those who don't know the lore, but like Polly Doran was at Melbourne Victory before she made the move to the Championship, and she was just like a big fan favorite, and by fan favorite, I mean I'm a fan. And she's my favorite. And so good for her. Good for her achieving big things over in the UK. And also I can say all of this, touching all the wood, that Crystal Palace will come up and West Ham will not go down. Sorry, Bristol. Sometimes it do be like that. But yeah, good for Anya Poza.
She's such a good story as well because she was never in those sort of junior rep teams or anything, scrapped her way through state leagues to Melbourne Victory to overseas. And she is now in the Young Matildas, but that's because of what she's done herself rather than being identified early. So hopefully she's got to get a deal to go and play in the WSL, be deserved, and just great news for the Tillies as well if you've got another right back capable of playing at that level. How good? I'll bounce off myself here. Not to be too Sydney FC focused, but I did see that Sydney FC men's captain and stalwart Luke Bratton took his daughters to the dub the other day. They were part of that massive crowd that Sam mentioned earlier. And they were all there, and Luke Bratton had a Vine Time t-shirt on. So, you know, we always love it when you see the men's and the women's team supporting each other. That's pretty normal now. Like, but to go all out and get the Vine Time t-shirt on while taking your daughters is just, like, great gear. So, yeah, how good?
It was a look that went extremely hard. I was like, where can I purchase all of this? I would like to recreate this outfit, actually. So massive how goods all round. Last little how good from me is
We got to use that.
What I was trying to say was Le Clean Sheet Queen herself, Ellie Carpenter, has had a half-decent couple of days. Was named to the League One team of the season because, of course, she was. And even better than that, qualified for her third Champions League final with Lyon, who got the win over PSG, but did it on her birthday. Like, sorry to, you know, whatever her family, whatever her fiance, whatever her friends got her, you didn't get her a Champions League final. So, like, sorry to the rest of yous, but we absolutely love to see Ellie Carpenter fit, firing, in finals, doing all of the things. So it's a massive how good. Do we have anything else to discuss today? Just a small bit of news regarding the 2027 Women's World Cup. We have seen that the Mexico-USA joint bid has withdrawn, so we are down to two. It's the...
They didn't want it.
Oh, God, that's good. We're down to the Brazil bid, and Harrow has made her intentions clear. She's currently wearing a Brazil Marta kit.
It is a Marta kit from Foudies.
Stunning. We love it. And the other bid is Belgium, Netherlands, Germany. So the bendy bid, as I have been calling it. We find...
Bergenerd.
You can keep trying to make Bergenerd happen, but I'm not going to participate in that.
Just listen to when you say Bergenerd. It sounds great.
Regardless...
I love Bergenerd. Bergenerd, or there's like Beganer, I think is another one.
Beganer. But... See, I respect that Marissa's trying to make, you know, the name, the country names that they call themselves.
Hmm.
But I take that point, and how funny does Bergenerd sound?
I'm not going to win, Bergenerd. But I'm right. This is like when people put Y's in Olympicos. Like, you can keep spelling it like that, but I'm right at the end of the day with my eyes. Anyway, does not matter.
They're very wrong if they're putting it like that.
Oh, they are. It bothers me. It bothers me so much.
Latin America will not be happy.
But... I digress, because I really got off track here. We will find out which of Brazil, and Belgium, Netherlands, Germany will be hosts. I know. I can't speak today. It's awful.
We have Bergenerd and we have Brazil. Choose your fighter.
The two genders.
Anyway, the point I was trying to make, that regardless of which bid you like, we will find out which one is successful very shortly. The FIFA meeting, which will decide the host, is in May. I think it's the 7th.
May 19th.
Yeah, yep. It's May 10th. So we will find out by the middle of next month where we're all going in 2027. So that's one to keep an eye on. But I think that's us done for today before I stuff up any more words. Thank you so much for
tuning
in. You
were saying Mexico. What was their name?
Say that again.
Usmex.
Oh, God.
That's why they pulled out.
Oh,
wasn't a good name.
It was not a good name.
Mexus.
Mexus. See, I could have got behind Mexus. Anyway,
this I can get behind Mexus.
Maybe they
yeah.
didn't think of that
That's
one.
Cool.
Anyway, that is us done for today. Remember, go buy your grand final tickets Saturday, May 4, Amy Park, 4:15 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time kickoff. It's going to be great fun. We can't wait to talk about it next week. But as always, we're over on ESPN.com.au and the ESPN app. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and all of your usual pod spots. If you like what we do, leave a review and subscribe. If you want to chat to us, we're at The Far Post Pod on all social media. But until next time, sawyers.